This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later on the show today, a preview of the Cincinnati Auto Expo. Joining me first to discuss the different types of advanced technology from 3D printing to video games that make a difference in the lives of people with disabilities, Enable UC's founder and president Jacob Knorr, clinical research fellow at the University of Cincinnati Gardner Neuroscience Institute, Ben Whistle. He's studying technology and the use of apps to help Parkinson's patients, and the founder of Wraith Games, Jay Kidd. You can join the conversation this afternoon at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jacob, Ben, Jay, thanks for being here today. Good to see everybody.
Good seeing you too.
Let's kind of start off with a broad overview here, because technology has been used to help people with disabilities for a number of years, but we've kind of reached a different point here, haven't we? I mean, we're getting to the point where we're seeing certain advances and certain moves forward in technology that are making it even more useful.
Yeah, well, in 3D printing specifically, we've seen a huge decrease in the cost of household 3D printers that anyone can get, that they're accessible for everyone. We have a 3D printer that we funded through University of Cincinnati. We got for less than $1,000. And with this, we can create prosthetics and assistive devices, each for less than $20. So really, for 3D printing, it's now accessible to the consumer, which is allowing us to make prosthetics and assistive devices accessible to people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm. And from your perspective, Ben?
Yeah, I can talk about from background in the medical standpoint. You, as a patient, you've been going to your doctor's office for years now, and you can see all types of machines collecting all sorts of data. But I think nowadays what statisticians can do with in terms of manipulating that data and actually making it useful is sort of turning a corner, and we're really being able to do some neat things with that. And the project we're working on now at UC, using an application to track disease progression and monitor symptoms with Parkinson's disease. This technology has been present in cell phones, really, for a number of years, but it's just being put together and analyzed in a new way.
Mm-hmm. And this data is all going toward finding solutions and potential cures, perhaps, for some of these problems that people are facing.
Right, right. We're looking at using how can this technology be applied to monitor our symptoms in Parkinson's disease in this case, and track how the disease progresses, and see if we can look at things within the disease that other clinical assessments aren't able to capture.
Jay, from your standpoint, being in the video game business, what advances in technology are we seeing there that are helping people with disabilities?
Well, there are quite a few, actually. Back in the day, you know, you sort of had the Wii, whole big trend going on with that, Nintendo's Wii. A lot of that motion tracking technology has actually been able to be used in physical rehabilitation. Couple that with the ability to have VR devices where you can have someone just put on a helmet and they sort of walk around these virtual areas, that can also be used for physical rehabilitation. And when you start thinking about from the actual software end, there's actually a lot of sort of not exactly brain training apps, but there's a lot of applications that actually allow for the ability to do sort of cognitive rehabilitative therapy as well.
And you were talking about the Wii. The Wii was actually used, you're right, to help people with disabilities, mm-hmm. with their function and their movement. I think they also found it was useful for people who were elderly.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and in the same respect, in helping them keep a level of functional fitness going.
Mm-hmm. And one of the cool things about that is the Wii had one-to-one motion tracking, and even Wiimotes are still used, like the Wii remote controls are still used with a lot of applications today because of that. It has one-to-one motion tracking, which allows for that sort of that steady, you know, make sure that it's perfectly tracking one's motion, that can allow the kinds of metrics you need when measuring whether or not someone's actually improving.
Mm-hmm. Jacob, tell us a little bit more about Enable UC. Your group is working with 3D printers. You're mainly engineering students who are involved in this, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. We're mainly biomedical engineering students. And what we're really about is empowering students through 3D printing to make a change where they wouldn't be able to otherwise. 3D printing allows our students to not only participate in computer-aided design work, but also see the manufacturing side of the prosthetics industry, and also make a direct improvement in the welfare of somebody with a disability. We've actually helped over 42 patients in the past year and a half, and that's just through prosthetics that are functional, that work based on wrist flexion, and can actually pick up pens, paper, a water bottle, to something that's more of an assistive device for people who are seeing occupational therapists. So that would be for applications for, let's say, traumatic brain injury. So we help people sort of live independently by creating devices that are patient-specific to them in an affordable manner.
So how do these compare with a traditional prosthetic device? What are the differences between the two? What you can create with 3D printing and what is more traditionally available?
So these, what we're producing are not state-of-the-art, but we're addressing a need that's not currently met. If you think about pediatric prosthetics right now, you're not going to get a state-of-the-art prosthetic for a kid because they're just going to grow out of it in 6 months to a year. So if we can make a patient-specific 3D printed one that costs, let's say, $20, 6 months down the line where they grow out of it or it breaks, it's very little cost to us to create another prosthetic that's sized to them that just allows them to get by until they're an adult and they can actually have a prosthetic that's covered by insurance companies. So really we're addressing the temporary need in pediatric prosthetics where really there's no other alternative.
Okay. So I guess accessibility is what you're aiming at, to make these devices more accessible to people.
Really. That's exactly right. And I actually think this has a huge, this has implications for places where there's medically underserved need, let's say in third world countries. Palestine, for example, is somewhere that we're really interested in. You have a lot of people that have these disabilities, whether it be because of the recent conflicts, and there's not really an infrastructure there to treat them, especially for prosthetics. So if we can break out into the global arena with 3D printing, I think we could do a lot of good.
And accessibility is a big word in the gaming industry too, isn't it, Jay?
At least,
as far as you're concerned. Yeah, making these more accessible to people. Mm-hmm. Talk some more about that.
Well, one of the things that Wraith does, as well as a lot of other companies as well, is we actually create games specifically designed for people with disabilities in mind. One of our big projects has full colorblind features as well as eye tracking for people who might be paralyzed or not have the use of their arms. And one of the cool things about things like this is the technology extends beyond the games themselves. It's useful even when you say, okay, it's nice that they're able to play these games, but can we take these applications and can we use them in other things that might help them with their daily lives? The same kind of eye tracking that we're using with Collapsis is also utilized for people who can use their browsers or who need to use their computer for other things.
Ben, is there at this point in talking about apps and devices like that, is there portable software, phone apps that people can use biosensors and monitor someone who might be prone to seizures or developing a seizure? I mean, you're talking about keeping track of people's medical data. Is that what's in existence at this point?
And in talking about accessibility and applications, that's exactly what we're testing right now in Parkinson's disease. We're working with an application called iMotor, which was developed by a company called Aptomics just outside of Boston, Massachusetts, and that uses software technology that's already on your smartphone or tablet, for example. So you could download this application onto any one of our phones in this booth right now, and then use the application to get additional data about Parkinson's disease or whatever other neurodegenerative disease that this app might be useful for in the future. So in terms of talking about accessibility, that's really the name of the game for this application in specific, and it's one of the major advantages for it.
Mm-hmm. 513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jacob, step us through, what is the process for creating a prosthetic using 3D printing?
So let's say we identify a patient that could benefit from one of our prosthetics that we produce. We don't even need to meet them necessarily. They can just send us a picture of their, we call it residual limb. These are children without fingers or maybe they have a partial palm. And with that picture, we can scale an open source 3D model to fit them perfectly. Now, I say open source, we use a lot of design files that are open, they're online, openly accessible to everybody. And again, that's one of these huge benefits is if it's accessible to us as Enable UC, it's accessible to the people that we're helping. So we take that design file, we scale it so that it fits the patient, we print it out, we get a group of members together in our organization to build it, we have a build event, and then we either send it to the patient if they're not in the region, or we meet them and we hold an event and give the patient their prosthetic right there.
How do the patients react?
It's really a form of disbelief and just sort of it's really cool being there and being able to experience seeing somebody do something for the very first time. Even as we had a 16-year-old come to campus in October, and he was picking up cups. His mom and dad were there as well, and the looks on their face was, I mean, it was really priceless. So again, if it's accessible to us, you know, technology is making all this accessible. We can do, you know, a lot of good.
And these are mechanical versus being maybe an electrical version, like the more expensive type.
That's correct.
Right?
These are mechanical, just based on wrist flexion. However, we are looking to develop a myoelectric hand. So that would essentially use some an Arduino, which is a sort of a computing
microcontroller
component. Exactly, a microcontroller. And senses impulses of muscle contraction in the forearm. So then this would be connected to a battery pack, and it would be something that is robotic. But at the same time, we would be coupling this with a 3D printed prosthetic that we use right now, and we could supply something like this for under $200-$300.
Wow.
And that, if you think about the alternative to that, I mean, myoelectrics on the market right now are, I mean, they can be as much as $100,000. And that's, you know, it's nice. They work really well. But it's just not accessible to the large majority of people.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
More vibrant urban core through community development and civic engagement. More information at johnson-foundation.org. Support comes from the Women's Fund of the Greater Cincinnati Foundation. The Women's Fund announces a conversation with Abby Wambach Saturday, March 25th at the Northern Kentucky Convention Center. Although Abby Wambach is best known as an international soccer legend, her new chapter as an advocate for gender equity is just as inspiring. Tickets at CincinnatiWomensFund.org.
Support comes from UC Health. At UC Health, they see hope for people facing serious medical conditions like cancer, neurologic disorders, and heart disease. At UC Health, they see the promise of academic medicine every day. UC Health, Cincinnati's only academic health system. You can see more at UCHealth.com.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU, here to discuss advanced technology that makes a difference in the lives of people with disabilities. Our Enable UC's founder and president, Jacob Knorr, clinical research fellow at the University of Cincinnati Gardner Neuroscience Institute, Ben Whistle, and he's studying technology and the use of apps to help Parkinson's patients, and the founder of Wraith Games, Jay Kidd. And you can be part of the discussion, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Are we reaching a point, because accessibility, cost, these are all things that that play into helping people with disabilities. Are we nearing a point or headed in a direction where the cost is going to continue to go down, accessibility is going to continue to increase? Is that what the three of you see?
Oh, certainly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think for 3D printing, in 10 years down the line, we could potentially all have one in our homes. I have a 3D printer producing whatever we deem necessary as we download an open access file, and you can create, let's say you need a hammer or a wrench or, anything that you can create that has a 3D architecture, you can do it with 3D printing, and it's going to be accessible, and with that comes a lot of benefit.
A lot of access to prosthetics and things like that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right across the street from our studio, actually, there's a service provided by a library. It's the Lane Library Tech Center in Hamilton. And basically what they do is they actually have six 3D printers right there. And for about a nickel, you can pretty much print whatever you want. Just go into Shapeways, do that. So even services like that are going to be able to have people printing whatever they need.
Yeah, there's actually I'm from Dayton originally, and there's a really cool place. It's called the Proto Build Bar, and you can go in, you can learn about 3D printing, learn about circuit building, but it's really a cool cafe environment coupled with 3D printing and access to it and people that know 3D printing. So if you're interested in checking it out, it's a great place to grab a cup of coffee and check out 3D printing.
And are we heading in the right direction, Ben, as far as technology and helping people with disabilities?
I think so. I think so. And in addition to cost and accessibility, you also have the component of what are these technologies able to do for people? You could have smartphones available all across the world, but if these apps were working on, what can they do? And when comparing apps, again, I'll go back to Parkinson's disease and tracking disease progression, gait, how a patient's walking, how their symptoms are fluctuating in terms of dosing and medication regimens. These things are really able to provide additional insight and beyond what these patients can discuss with their providers in a 30-minute or one-hour office visit, where really they're living with these disabilities or whatever disease they might have. They're living every day with that. So these things can provide additional traction throughout every day and give details to both the patient and the provider. How they did not only when they were in the clinic, but also how they were last week, last month, et cetera. So,
what about the software and applications for people who are hearing and sight impaired? Are we making a lot of progress on those as well?
Well, I think that they program that in. You can make any iPad or iPhone something that, let's say your site's not very good, you can change those settings in there and that works for you better than had that software not been there. So I think really that maybe comes with the industry. They're making it more accessible.
Mm-hmm. I've certainly noticed that in the independent games community, there's this large push, especially because there's this charity, the Able Gamers Foundation. What they do is they sort of help developers to put in these accessibility options, and we've worked with them a bit, and they have this wealth of knowledge for anyone who wants it to say, here's how you put in stuff for people who are vision impaired, here's how you put in stuff for people who are hearing impaired, and it's a set of standards and a set of techniques that actually allow these applications to become more accessible.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you would like to join us. You mentioned earlier, Jacob, the myoelectric arm, and that Enable UC is working in that direction. How close are you on that?
So we've purchased some components, and we're going to proceed with testing. But we really just started recently funding the effort. On the order of one arm, it's going to cost about $500 in research and development funds. But if we were to scale that up, we would be looking for more funding. However, we are just in the testing stage, but anything that we create is going to be a cool addition to, you know, hopefully give to a patient that we've already given a 3D printed prosthetic to.
Okay, so what comes after the myoelectric arm? where do you go next?
I'm not sure, really. I think that really the sky's the limit. We have a lot of dedicated students that like to spend, you know, this is their extracurricular activity at UC. They really enjoy putting time in on this. So, you know, I'm graduating in April, but I'm sure that the students that are going to be there after I leave are going to come up with some great stuff.
Well, that's part of what you're trying to do at Enable UC as well. You're trying to encourage people who are studying engineering to go into this particular line of engineering, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. We're really trying to inspire, well, we're trying to give good skill sets to biomedical engineering students that are already at UC, but also to inspire that next generation of engineering students. So we do have some high school outreach initiatives to go to high schools in the area, talk about 3D printing. You can bring in the prosthetic. It's very cool. And sort of get them interested, because a lot of students right now, they hardly know what engineering is, you know, when they're sophomore, junior year. So if we can get them excited about it, we can inspire that next generation.
And you actually have one of the devices with you. Can you describe that to us? Tell us about that.
So this is actually a device for a pediatric patient, let's say 4 or 5 years old. It was 3D printed with blue PLA plastic, which is consumer ready, consumer available. And it works mechanically. All the pins, all the joints are 3D printed. And then to make it functional, we tie some elastic lines to each of the fingers and some twine to the wrist cuff. So basically, anyone that has wrist flexion can operate this and use it.
And again, these are meant to be like a bridge.
A temporary
stepping stone to something more, right?
Yes, that's correct. If you ask any doctor or hand therapist, they'll tell you that if a kid has never used a prosthetic before, when they reach adulthood, they're not very likely to use one successfully. Now, one of the things that we're trying to do here is create a standard of care so that they're used to using prosthetics when they're 3 or 4 years old, when they're 7 and 8, when they get into the teens, so that when they're to that point where they can get something that's legitimate off the market, a conventional prosthetic that works really well, they're going to be able to get the most out of that. So we're really just trying to establish the use early with as many children as possible.
Now, Ben, where do you stand with your work? How far along is what you're doing?
So we completed our first study using iMotor a few years ago that was comparing Parkinson's patients to healthy volunteers to see how well the app could differentiate between Parkinson's patients and healthy volunteers and the way they tapped on the screen. This is tapping on the screen of a tablet like an iPad or a Samsung Galaxy, for example, and the app did that very well. It differentiated between the two populations with a coefficient of 0.98, so one being perfect. The next study, which we finished or about to publish, was comparing Parkinson's patients off their medication and on their medication and how they functioned tapping the screen again in between the two medication states and how well the application could accurately pick up how the patients were moving in those two medication states. And again, it was picked up the two medication states well. So moving forward, I think the next key in this sort of realm for this iMotor application and for technologies in general, at least in Parkinson's patients and other diseases, is to get these in clinical trials and then at home with the patient. So first in clinical trials, of course, now we have standard assessments where clinicians assess the patients and patients fill out paper forms on how they think their motor function is doing, how their activities of daily living are doing, what their quality of life is like. But these technologies are really able to hone in on specific things that some of these scales and assessments may not be able to capture as sensitively. So these things could eventually one day be sort of a standard of care as you're seeing new medications come out that are being developed to treat these diseases. These technologies could be used to better assess how well these medications work. And then secondly, the patients could take these technologies home with you. We talked about earlier how it's as easy as downloading the application, in this case on your smartphone or tablet. So in that case, you'll have it with you all the time. So not only when you go to the doctor's office, you can show him or her, look, this is how I've been doing over the past 6 months or however long it's been since you've been in to see your doctor. You can say, right now I may look good or bad. This is what you're seeing me now, but look, this is how I've been the past couple weeks or months since we've made these changes at my last visit. So these are some of the things that we'll see in the short-term future.
Yeah, short-term future. How long do you think?
Hopefully within the next few years. There's over, at the last count, 70 different technologies that are being developed all across the world at different pharmaceutical industries. Big technology companies have an interest in getting into this field, and a lot of people are putting a lot of time and effort into really making this happen.
Mm-hmm. Jay, how far along is the video game industry? How far along are they on developing games that can be used by people with disabilities?
As far as how far along the industry is, that's now. Mm-hmm. That was actually 10 years ago. The thing is that it's not about whether or not these games are available that can be used now in a big, large, meaningful way. It's more a question of what new things can we sort of offer up to the medical field to actually be able to then further increase things. Very recently, it was about a couple of years ago, there was some use with hydrotherapy, in pools with people who were of limited mobility. And what they were doing was that they were using Oculus Rift, back when it was still a dev kit, the VR device, the virtual reality device, coupled with motion tracking to be able to sort of create almost a resistance training regimen for people who had very limited use of all of their limbs. And what they were doing was they were monitoring these metrics through several months, and they were finding that this was actually helping people more than traditional therapy, more than the whole sort of stand up and use the bars to try to walk sort of thing. So what we're looking at now, and even Nintendo actually 2 years ago opened up an entire wing of the company specifically for game technology used in medical applications. They dump millions of dollars into this, and it's just amazing what they're able to do with this sort of thing.
Well, is what Nintendo did, or is that common in the gaming industry? Or
it is
a lot
completely
of them
uncommon.
Saying this is okay.
It was weird because they had released this. It was a heart rate monitor, and it used some amazing new technology that they were working with mostly their biometric feedback stuff from other peripherals. And the industry just kind of laughed at them. But after they saw use of this in hospitals and things, that's when they decided to open up this sort of medical technologies wing. And that's almost entirely unheard of.
And Nintendo so far is the only one who's done this, or?
There are some smaller game studios, but most of the time when you see that, you're seeing studios who are specifically designing games for medical applications. You don't see something like EA or Sony or Microsoft creating medical technologies wings from their gaming divisions. That's not something they're doing yet. But with Nintendo being this successful, it's only a matter of time.
And what's the biggest challenge each of you faces? Is it funding? Is it getting funding for doing this work?
I think for 3D printing, we've been very fortunate in terms of funding from UC. Funding's been very generous, and again, we're creating things that are very low cost. However, it's going to be important if we want to diversify our capabilities for printing new materials. Let's say you want to do anything that's a lower limb prosthetic. Well, good luck 3D printing it in the particular material that we're using for hands. We're going to need something that's much more mechanically stable. So That would require some new machinery, some new tools, some new 3D printers. So again, funding is always welcome. Mm-hmm.
But Ben, what about you? Challenges you face, is money the biggie?
I think one thing that is what we're looking at right now is there's a lot of technologies available, or at least in development, but before we might see them really come to market and become the standard of care, is it takes time to development to validate them, to sort of analyze the data, collect and figure what's working and what's not working, because it's not easy. But you can think of ideas that say, oh, it'd be awesome to measure, you know, how a patient is walking and measure their tremor, but really every individual patient is different, so it's not as easy as measuring one thing and then just looking at that and moving forward. It's what combination of measurements and applicability could we combine and validate? Could we put that together and then move forward? And that's sort of the process that we're in now. Is there's at least by last count over 70 different technologies available, but we're sort of trying to figure out which measurements are the best, and how do we analyze them to make them most sensitive to each individual patient.
Just not enough time and the day to do all that, right?
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Well, Jacob, Ben, and Jay, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Enable UC's founder and president, Jacob Knorr, clinical research fellow at the University of Cincinnati Gardner Neuroscience Institute, Ben Whistle, who is studying technology and the use of apps to help Parkinson's patients, and the founder of Wraith Games, Jay Kidd. Coming up, we'll get a preview of the Cincinnati Auto Expo. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.